Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Savakis.
And I'm Zach Birch. Welcome to AnCast. We're not even going to bother with the what you've been watching thing until later, because there's obvious huge news we should talk about.
Yes, and that news is Funimation, the big beacon of DVD releases and dubs that still remains in the U.S., is up for sale.
Right, and naturally everybody goes, oh my god!
World is ending!
Yeah, which, this is actually not negative news at all, really.
It's not great news, but it's not bad news.
No, it's not, well, okay.
It's news.
We should say up front, here's what's happening. I mean, we should just explain
right.
It, so go.
Okay. Funimation and Navarre, kind of mismatched companies. Didn't start off that way, became that way over the course of years. Navarre wants money. They think that one of the few remaining profitable or borderline profitable companies that are still in DVD space might be worth something. So they put it up on the market, and in hopes that they will find a better foster parent for Funimation.
Yeah, like a company that's actually involved in the entertainment industry and creating content and stuff like that.
Right.
Which is not Navarre, and never has
Navarre
been.
Thought they were going to be that when they bought Funimation, but ended up way not that.
Yeah, exactly. So people understand, because I don't think this is widely understood, what does Navarre do? What's the majority of their business?
Navarre is mostly a wholesale reseller.
Right.
Mostly of software product right now. They used to be more involved in video, but they're very mass market. What that means is the software that you see like at a, I guess, whatever regional grocery store that you have, you know, that sort of thing. The little software rack that has, you know, crossword puzzle things in a CD jewel case.
99 solitaire games, yeah.
Exactly. Well, they actually go pretty high end. They go all the way up to like the stuff from Roxio.
Okay.
They stock everything for like the Walmart type knockoff stores, like Meijer. I'm from the Midwest. Meijer would be a good example.
Right.
They're like a big Walmart, and they have a software section. Mm-hmm. But you know, they probably don't have the manpower to manage all these little tiny software companies and manage inventory from each one of them. So they buy from one reseller. It takes them, you know, 20 minutes out of their day.
Right. So that's what Navarre is generally doing most of the time. That's the bulk of their business. And Funimation right. is an entertainment corporation. I mean,
right. And Navarre used to be more involved in entertainment. They had BCI Eclipse, and BCI Eclipse was more about the supermarket checkout aisle DVDs.
Yeah, and He-Man.
And He-Man, and yeah. Like the sort of stuff that you'd see in like a kids section or like the little DVD section of a truck stop or something.
Right. And especially now, Funimation's starting to get in seriously into co-productions. So they're going to be producing things at this point.
Right, which Navarre never had anything to do with. They're based in, you know, Duluth, Minnesota or something like that.
Right.
They really, you know, it has nothing to do with their core competency whatsoever.
Right. And so now Chris McDonald interviewed Gen about this today. We're recording this on Thursday, and both of us have heard this interview.
It's a text interview, so we're not sharing this audio.
It's a text interview. You listeners will have probably read it by the time this podcast comes out. I presume so. And in it, Gen basically says, okay, look, either we find a better partner for the right price, or we just continue our relationship with Navarre and things go on as planned. That's what he said. Those are the two outcomes here. So there really is no reason to behave like this is any sort of bad news. I really don't think it is. I think it, although the only, I will say this, I really don't think Adam Sheehan is looking forward to being micromanaged by Hollywood middle managers and executives.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
I sort of hope they're crossing their fingers that they don't get snapped up by, like, oh, let's say Time Warner. But that would be a better partner for them. But who, I wouldn't want to be working there.
No, I would not. Yeah, a lot of the big major media companies are kind of, you know, they're all bailing out themselves. They're all laying off a ton of people. I kind of doubt they'll really be into a Funimation. What might be a good partner for them is like someone who's just kind of in the middle and looking to get more into the space, like a Panasonic or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Matsushita.
The great hope is that whoever comes along is a better partner than Navarre. And that's a lot of different companies that could be better for Funimation than Navarre is. So this is not a Sky is Falling scenario. This is not the end of the world. It's just a thing that's happening. So I don't know.
Boy, wouldn't it be weird if Microsoft bought them?
That would be kind of awesome, actually, and it would be a good partnership, I think.
That would be a great partnership. We'd suddenly have much better Halo anime, maybe.
Maybe. They had every resource available to them in the last one. So yeah, so that's what's happening with that. It is nothing to get your panties in a twist over.
One other thing is, in a few weeks, Funimation is, regardless what happens with the sale, they're announcing their first GoPro, actually announcing it.
Right, and in that interview, it was interesting, Gen pointed out that they're looking to basically adapt existing IPs. They're not talking about just coming up with something new.
Right, so please stop sending them your terrible ideas.
Yeah, I'm sure they get plenty of those. But the idea is to adapt other popular things into anime.
More or less what Yen Press is doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Except with anime.
We'll get the Gossip Girl anime series soon enough. Which is probably a smart thing, you know? They might be able to sell that, so...
That's true. You know, and they're... Hopefully we don't end up with Sin the movie.
Yeah, I hope that... Yeah, I really hope they just pick mainstream stuff that... Like, Twilight should be an anime. Easily should be an anime. Like, I could see that. You know, the graphic novel came out, it did gangbusters. Make the anime. The characters are basically anime characters anyway. You know, it's a shoujo anime. So, yeah, that would totally make sense.
There's a ton of great properties out there. It's this is the time to start. If you must engage in rampant, completely ill-informed speculation, this would be the time to predict what Funimation is going to try to adapt into anime.
Yeah, and that's, you know what, not only is that totally harmless speculation, it's fun.
Not if ADV or Bandai is going to buy them.
Yeah, because, guys, that's not going to happen. The rest of the anime industry has nothing to do with this.
No money.
It is solely a Funimation thing. That's the annoying thing. It's like anytime anything happens, it's like these companies are not really connected to each other. You know, they're all in the same space. They're all competing with each other. But it's not like something happens to ADV. Let's start speculating about what this means for Bandai. It means jack shit for Bandai. You know, that's the annoying thing. That's not how these things work.
Well, then again, this industry has proven itself again and again to be incredibly incestuous.
That's true. But if problems come with the speculation, the problems happen when ADV announces we're selling ourselves to ourselves and splitting ourselves into four different companies, and somebody goes, but what about Bandai?
Bandai?
Yeah, what about it? It has nothing to do with this. Stop trying to draw these connections and connect these dots that aren't there. And I think that's where the dangerous speculation comes in. That's where you see people spreading misinformation, I think.
Oh, yeah. And basically, you get into the vicious cycle again where people pull stuff out of their ass and present it as fact.
Yeah. I'm happy that we have this interview already and, you know, people can get the truth about this right away. It doesn't have to be, you know, a week, 2 weeks of speculation. So right. There you go. So what else is new?
I didn't get a chance to watch much this week. I did, however, get the chance to go out and see the new restoration of Metropolis.
So you actually
saw it? Not the anime, the good one.
Right. You actually saw it?
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. For those who don't know, Metropolis, before it was an anime and before it was a manga, was a German silent movie from 1927, which is more or less the inspiration behind most modern science fiction.
Yeah.
At least visually. And the story goes that Metropolis, immediately after its premiere, was chopped up and they cut out about a half hour to 45 minutes before anyone saw it. And those 45 minutes have just been lost to time. Or so we thought until about last year when some film vault in Buenos Aires pulled out a really scratched up, walked over, coffee stained 16 millimeter print. And they found it and did their best restoring it. The new found material looks pretty terrible, but it exists for the first time. And so now for the first time, we can see Metropolis more or less like it should have been. And I gotta say, I've seen this film in its other states hundreds of times. This is a completely different film.
Right.
It's a much better film. It's much smarter than we previously gave it credit for. Previously, the film versions had stooped to, you know, stupid things like somebody loses his memory and goes crazy. That doesn't happen anymore. Now character motivations are clear. It makes complete sense, and it's much more chilling and intelligent. It's a fantastic film.
Yeah, I'm drooling over the Blu-ray already.
Oh, yeah. It's not coming out till November. There is a slow theatrical run right now, so if it's playing in your area, you owe it to yourself to see it. It is one of the best science fiction films ever made.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that if you love movies, you have to see it.
And this is a guy that, you know, you'll pull the 80s rock and roll remix version out of my cold dead hands, but this is way better.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see it. Although I did hear that a lot of the scenes, like, they were cut because they were redundant.
No,
that's not the case.
No, in fact, it adds some really much needed character background. There are whole characters that just kind of disappear and you never know what happened to them.
Right.
In the American cut. And finally it fleshes out what happened to them and they have complete character arcs.
Oh. That's really cool. Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
I mean, it's still a silent movie. The characters still pantomime too much, and, you know, it clubs you over the head with its message, literally. I mean, it more or less, the moral of the story is flashed on the screen in huge text 4 or 5 times. But hey, it was made in 1927.
Right. Yeah. It's a piece of film history that you just can't miss.
So. And it inspired Osamu Tezuka to make a manga that he didn't like, and then Rintaro made an even crappier anime that, you know, after he died. So.
Yeah, that was terrible.
You know, that originally when Sony brought out that anime, they were supposed to, that was supposed to be a hack and slash dub.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were supposed to have rescored it and made like over 100 cuts to it. And that's one of those that I think they really should have.
Yeah.
I think that was a missed opportunity. They could have really tightened up that narrative and really made that a working film.
Yeah. It's one of those things where a competent story editor really could have fixed that movie up, I think. Yeah, I think it just needed a deft hand to cut it up.
It could have been.
It's not always the best when something is released as the director intended, especially when the director is Rintaro.
The man with a proven track record of not being able to tell a story, but failing very prettily.
Yeah. Speaking of horrible disappointments, I, like most of the rest of the country, watched the series finale of Lost on Sunday.
You know, following the Twitter response to that, I've never been so happy to have not seen a show in my life.
The first season of Lost is amazing, and I would recommend it to anybody to watch the very first season and then completely skip the rest of it. The ending of that show, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because people immediately started comparing it to the ending of the Evangelion TV series, so that's why we're getting into this here. The ending of Lost, the whole show basically set up all these mysteries like, oh, what does this mean? And there's secret locations and secret codes to figure out, and oh, what's the smoke monster and all that. Turns out at the end, pretty much none of that fucking mattered at all. The wrap-up of that show is, well, if you live as friends and family, you won't die alone. That's the whole point. None of that other shit mattered at all. It was all red herrings. Like,
omedetou.
Yeah.
Sorry.
To wit, the entire second season is about them recovering Walt, the little magic boy, who ultimately has fucking nothing to do with anything. That character doesn't even show up in the finale. I was so mad. I was yelling at the TV. The show basically starts being about something completely different, and all those mysteries you were trying to dig into for 3 or 4 seasons of that show meant nothing. And so when people started comparing this to Evangelion, I have to defend Evangelion as a coherent narrative. There's a few red herrings in Evangelion. The religious imagery is, well, it's not even really a red herring because it's an apocalypse story. So of course it uses religious imagery. All of it connects. You can figure out exactly what happens in Evangelion, and everything that happens matters to the story. It's a coherent narrative. You can say at the end of it, it was actually the end of the world. It all came down to a binary choice for the main character. It was this big, crazy apocalypse story. Lost has, it feels like it should be going there. It should be heading towards an apocalypse story, but they don't even do that. So, you know, if anyone compares the two, please point out one of these is a responsible, coherent narrative, and it's Evangelion.
Jesus.
Yeah, so fuck Lost.
Put another way, one friend of mine who is not into anime at all pointed out it seemed like you could tack the last 20 minutes of the finale onto the end of the first season and just be done with it.
Yep, you could. Exactly. That was the first thing that came to my mind. It's like, and not only that, the entire ending relied completely on cheap sentimentality. In the end, the only thing that mattered is that they were able to pull your heartstrings because you had sentimental attachments to these characters that you spent so much time with. And that's it. And that's all they resolved. That's all they talked about. That's all that really happened. There's, you know, mumbo jumbo about the smoke monster and stuff like that, but none of that really mattered.
So they were really completely making up as it went along.
Absolutely. Oh, totally. If they'd been planning this out, seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5 would have had some bearing on the end. That's 121 hours where only about 20 of them matter.
Wow.
Lost. The other thing, briefly, before we get to the guest, and you have an announcement here, I wanted to say, I wanted to sort of throw this out there. Now, what initially we invited people to submit new theme songs for the show, and the result of that was, email saying, hey, I have a band, what kind of song are you looking for? And then about 500 emails telling me not to change the theme song. And I agree with that. The theme song has grown on me. However, I wanted to invite people to cover the theme song in creative ways. Now, it's going to be tough because that's undeniably a reggae tune, and it's not a lot of space for creative reinterpretation. But hey, give it a shot. You know, add lyrics if you want to. Whatever you want to do to it, it just has to resemble that opening, that little opening tune. So, if you know, it's just for fun. If we get something, we get something. If we get nothing, we get nothing. But if you turn something in, I will play it at the beginning of the show. So there you go. Anyway, so you have an announcement.
Yes. I've mentioned it a couple times in the past, and I can scarcely believe it is happening, but June 1st, or thereabouts, our new video player will finally go live. And I could not be happier because, damn, it feels like we've had this damn thing in development forever.
Yeah.
New video player will be much better video quality. Hopefully we'll stutter for people a little less. The commercials won't have a giant glitch before them. It'll actually act like a video player that was, you know, coded for a real professional website.
Right.
So I have a ton of backlog to get to that Funimation sent us. We have all the grand old Toei shows that they've given everyone else. We have a couple other announcements, including one exclusive that we got direct from Japan. I'll tell people, do not have high expectations. This is not anything recent or any, you know, huge hit, but it's something that no one is expecting.
Right.
So we'll be announcing all of that as soon as the player goes live on June 1st or thereabouts in case something goes wrong and I'm leaving myself padding there.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, people can look forward to that. Sounds like next week, right?
Yep.
Cool. All right, let's get to the guest. It's Heat Guy. Do, Jay. Okay, our guest today is Tim Mon. He's the author and creator of timmonbooks.com. He's a published science fiction author over in the UK and British anime blogger extraordinaire. Tim, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Sure, no problem. So tell us, give us a little introduction to British anime fandom, because I mean, I'm unfamiliar with what it's like over there.
I think in all honesty now, it's probably not that different to how it is in the States. I think the internet has made, I think, this big kind of instantaneous, homogenized mess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the biggest issues fans have now is getting hold of anime over here, which has always been, well, I say it's always been an issue. It's certainly an issue now more than it used to be. I mean, there was a time, you know, 20 years ago, when Manga UK were kind of the king of licensing, and they were, I mean, I know Justin knows a lot about this. They were kicking out dubs. I think they were dubbing at some point, like half of all anime that was released in English was originating in the UK, but it's just not like that anymore, unfortunately. And the biggest, I guess the biggest two companies over here really now that are Manga still, and Bees, which are a French company, but still they don't have the same sort of presence that Manga definitely used to have back in the day. So as a result, we always feel a little bit behind you guys is the main problem. we're always feeling a little bit like catch up, especially with like the streams issue and things like that now. As for sort of fandom itself, I don't know that really it's that different. The con scene's quite different. We don't really have the same kind of con scene that you guys have. We certainly, just because of the size of the country, don't have the regularity. I mean, I watch, you know, I talk to people on Twitter, I read blogs and I read your site, etc. And, you know, there's cons every weekend, it seems, just because the size of the country. We don't have that. We have a very few small cons, and the focus, I think, is quite different. I have to admit, I'm not a great con goer myself. I'm going to one on Saturday, actually. That's not really an anime con. It's London Expo, which is a kind of, I don't know what you call it, really. It's a bit of video games, and it's a lot of science fiction TV, and anime is sort of there. But there isn't any anime panels. There's one industry panel on a Saturday. There's no guests, you know, big-name guests. Last one I went to last year, they had a couple of guys from Bones over because they were trying to flog Sword of Stranger. But that was about it. But what we do have over here is film festivals. The film festival scene is quite healthy over here, so we get a lot of anime premieres and stuff, as you guys know, because I've been writing reviews for you.
Yeah, I'm fairly jealous. you're getting to see some really cool stuff because we've talked about this before, is that, you know, there's a lot more theatrical production going on right now, and everything I've seen recently has trumped most of the TV stuff I've seen in terms of the films. Now, briefly, what have you seen at these festivals? What's stood out to you? What maybe wasn't so good? I mean, tell us about that.
Well, Redline obviously was just absolutely phenomenal, man. I haven't been so excited about any anime production for a very long time. It's almost hard to start talking about it. It's not the deepest of films, right. But it is so beautifully made and so exciting to watch. I mean, really exhilarating to watch. And I mean, that showed at the beginning of the month. At the Mangle Nighter, which is an event sponsored by Manga UK, which gives you possibly a good indication that they may be looking at eyeing up a license for it. I can't say much more than that, but from talking to them, I think there's quite a strong possibility of that. The film is just amazing. I mean, it's very clearly, and I read a Roland Keltz interview with the director, it's very clearly been made for an international market.
Yeah.
And it does feel like it has got potential crossover to it, just because, and it's you know, one of the craziest films to have potential crossover in a way, because it's very unlike, it's very unconventional.
It doesn't look anything like the standard anime look.
No, which doesn't matter. It looks fantastic. I mean, I think I said in the review there's only like two characters in it really that traditional character anime character designs that you would look at and say they're anime characters, because the rest of the cast is aliens or cyborgs or alien hybrids or uplifted dogs and stuff. You know, it's just completely batshit crazy. It's kind of like a really, really cool take on Star Wars or something, you know, like the cantina scenes in Star Wars and things like that.
Right.
The whole film feels like that, you know, which is just, it's just fascinating, man. It's just so exciting to watch. But the thing about it is, I actually took a friend of mine with me who is a moderate anime fan. He watches stuff that I give him to watch, and he was blown away by it. He came out of it going, what the hell was that? And I can see a lot of people doing that. It's the sort of film that will appeal to people that just like crazy, insane movies, regardless of the type. The thing it kind of reminded me of a lot, and I think they were taking, you know, design cues from Moebius and a lot of Western stuff. It feels almost like The Fifth Element, like the first time you saw The Fifth Element. It's a little bit more exciting than that, almost. I mean, I don't know if you guys like The Fifth Element. I'm a fan.
I love that movie.
Big following here.
Not a huge fan.
When's the last? You haven't seen it, like, since it came out, though, right? I don't think Justin's seen The Fifth Element since it came out.
No, I haven't. I should probably rent the Blu-ray.
I'll just loan it to you. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I love that movie.
Okay, well, you're going to love this, then. If you like The Fifth Element, you're going to love it. I think you'll love it as well, Justin. But, I mean, it's got that kind of design ethic to it in a certain way, and but it's just intense. It's just full on from start to finish. It's got this insane like techno influenced soundtrack, which is just like thumping all the way through it. You literally are sat in your seat going, oh my God, watching it. It's just, yeah, it's just a fantastic work. It's just brilliant. Lots of references, not just to Western stuff. There's references to Akira and stuff. And I think that's kind of the thing. I came out of that, and I think that's the first film I've seen, the first anime film I've seen at cinema that I've come out of since Akira, and I was shaking with excitement.
Wow.
Yeah. Really? You weren't shaking after you saw Jinro?
I wasn't. I was trying to wake up. I like that movie.
Well, I was.
It's not.
I love Jinro, man. I love
so
Jinro,
do I.
But yeah.
But it's kind of boring.
Yeah. It's people know I'm a massive Oishi fan.
Disqualified as a cineast.
Actually, briefly though, Redlines had sort of a really tortured production history. Justin, do you know if it's because we know the financial condition Madhouse is in? Is that sort of make it or break it for them?
I wouldn't say make or break. I'm pretty sure that, you know, after almost a decade in production, they've kind of financially, they hope for the best, but I'm pretty sure they're probably just kind of sitting, hoping that it will make back something of the amount they put into it.
Yeah.
So are they not doing too well? Because, I mean, Summer Wars was a big deal for them in Japan, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that was kind of work for hire for them because that was produced by Kadokawa. A bunch of their homegrown stuff has just completely fallen on its face. Long story short, they're not doing so hot. They've self-financed a lot of stuff that turned out to be either just too risky or just kind of misfires, and they're looking to cut back. Also, the thing is, in the last 10 years, there's been so many regime changes. I mean, they were bought out once. They were... they had a couple management reshuffles. They're barely the same company as they were when that production began.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what is going on politically, but since they don't distribute their own work, I mean, it doesn't even matter. It's out of their hands now.
I'm kind of gutted to hear that because they're probably my favorite studio over the last probably decade, I'd say. There's a lot of productions of theirs that I really... really value.
They do some great work, but it's the stuff that it's the really artistic stuff that's really hurting right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I would like to think that this will have a massive DVD and Blu-ray cult following outside of Japan. It's going to, if I can have anything to do with it. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to push it to people I know and online as much as I can because it's a fantastic work, man.
You know,
really blew me away.
This and sort of The Stranger always kind of made me look and go, you know, if only we had a Manga UK or Manga US circa 1998 or so.
Yeah.
They would be able to do something with this. Like, we would be able to do bank with this. But, you know, instead we have people just kind of crapping out DVD releases without putting any real marketing effort behind it just because they can't afford to and don't have the manpower. And so it just sits there and nothing takes off.
See, that kind of gets me about the marketing thing because I think I was having this discussion online with some people last month and I think there's a lot that can be done that isn't necessarily expensive. I just think that, I don't know, I'm no expert. I don't do it for a living. It's easy for me to sound off about this stuff. But there's a lot of stuff, you know, you could be going to sci-fi sites like IO9 and who have these huge audiences and just giving them content, basically. And they're desperate for content sites like that. They're shitting out posts, you know, 20, 30 posts a week. I just think, you know, something like Redline would really fly with their audience, potentially. I don't know. Like I say, it's easy for me to stand off about it because I don't have to do it for a living.
Well, I mean, commercials for Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood started popping up on ESPN of all places. So Funimation's spending a little bit of money.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Spending a little bit of money. I don't know if ESPN is exactly the place they should be putting that.
Well, no. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I have these fantasies about marketing like something like Giant Killing over here. That show's never going to get released in the UK, man. But, you know, during the World Cup, that would be easy money. You know, even if people were looking at it in a slightly typically British, ironic, sarcastic, look at this hilarious Japanese football show, you know, kind of way, people would still, if it was on TV, people would watch it here. People are crazy about soccer here, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So soccer anime, or football, as you guys call it, it doesn't do well there.
It doesn't exist here.
Really?
So I don't know of any shows that have been licensed here.
So, like, no Captain Tsubasa, no Whistle, none of that stuff? Really?
No, not that I know of, no.
So UK fans are sort of the same as American fans then in that they don't they don't like the sports stuff.
I mean, I think the problem is, I don't know either of those shows you mentioned, because they've never been over here, right? And how old are they? Are they in the last decade?
Tsubasa's like 20 years old. Whistle's
Tsubasa's looking pretty long in the tooth these days, yeah. But there's others.
Yeah, there's others. Whistle was it was like 10 years ago, I think.
Whistle's also a little on the janky side. It was, you know, made for low-budget cable and looked like it.
I'm not saying these are good. I'm just saying these are soccer shows, and so that's right. Sort of surprising to me. I mean, Giant Killing is also sort of a budget title, but it's being simulcast here for some reason.
Yeah, I can work that out. That threw me completely when I saw that. I don't know. I'm guessing the issue is here we are so dependent on what you guys do now.
Really?
Okay. Hmm. It feels. Oh, I hope my friends in the industry over here aren't listening to this. It feels a lot of the time like we are picking up crumbs that's fallen from your table. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and we're certainly not dubbing stuff ourselves, really. Not that I know of.
So you just get all the Texas stuff.
Yeah, we're getting, I mean, Manga are predominantly picking up Funimation licenses. Yeah.
Right. I wonder if Funimation ever thought about moving into that field. I'm sure they have at some point. But it sounds like Manga UK pretty much continues to dominate over there.
It does, but just on a much smaller scale, yeah.
Right. So the British fans, I mean, it because American fans rely completely on just whatever comes out in Japan because of the internet, like what we've been talking about. You know, they know everything that's on the air in Japan. They're downloading all the fan subs. But the British fans rely on the American fans to find out about stuff?
No, it's exactly the same. We're doing exactly the same. I don't think I think online it's hard now to make a differentiation between British and American fans. We're both going to the same sites.
Right.
I mean, my blog, right, is read predominantly by American readers,
right?
Vastly American readers. You know, if I look at my traffic, something like 60-70% is coming from the US, and then the rest is coming from Europe. But it's predominantly Americans reading my site. I don't think there's any differentiation between that. And people over here downloading fan subs. I'm downloading fan subs. I've always put my hands up and admitted to that. The other problem is importing, I think, for the industry over here is that, you know, I'm importing stuff on a monthly basis from you guys, from Region 1, yeah, because it tends to be a bit cheaper and you're getting stuff sometimes a long time before it comes out. You know what Manga UK's big release this month is? In fact, it's not out yet, it's out at the weekend. You know what their big release is this month?
No.
Skycrawlers. Right, and which has been out over in the US for 18 months, 12 years, 12 months, 18 okay, months, I'm guessing.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
I had it as soon as it came out, Region 1 Blu-ray, I imported it. Because
right.
I'm an ocean, and there was no way I was going to wait to see it. And it was meant to come out in March, and it was delayed, and it's coming out the end of this month. You know, so that's painful for fans over here. So you're either going to download, or if you can, you're going to import it.
I would imagine that like Manga UK, they sort of discourage people from importing.
I've not seen them actively doing that, but yeah, I'm guessing they're not very keen on it. But most people are doing it. Most people I know are doing it. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Naruto stuff that's giving them money. I think, you know, it's because they send me screeners all the time, and it's all Bleach and stuff like that. That's what's keeping them ticking over, I think, over here. Probably the younger crowd who can't import, who are possibly not even buying stuff online, are actually still going into shops and buying stuff. But with the older fans rather, I think a lot of people are importing and everyone's downloading, you know.
Right. Shifting gears briefly here. So you are a published science fiction author.
Yeah, well, yeah, I am. Yeah, I've had one short story published in Anthology this year. And I've got something else coming out later in the year. Maybe two things coming out later in the year. I wouldn't call myself, like, I'm not famous or anything.
Technically, but you're published, and that means a lot.
Yeah.
Was your attraction to sci-fi what drew you to anime?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. The big thing really was Akira for me. I was 17, I think, 16, 17, when Akira was shown at cinema over here. and me and a friend went to see a little art house cinema in Oxford, and it was basically, I think we'd seen a couple of screenshots from it in a computer games magazine, and it was like, wow, what the hell's this? And at the time, I was, you know, heavily into cyberpunk, into William Gibson and kind of those sort of late 80s, early 90s cyberpunk movies and books that were doing the rounds. So it kind of was like at the time, it was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen, to be honest with you. Do you know what I mean? I actually, right. Yeah, it just threw me completely. Before that, anime over here was pretty much non-existent. As a kid growing up, we didn't really have anything. I think we had Battle of the Planets. I used to watch in the 70s when I was really young, and we had like Mysterious Cities of Gold. And the thing that I was obsessed with as a kid actually was Starfleet, which is a puppet show, Gonagai puppet show.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's fantastic, man. It was called X-Bomber in Japan, and it was bought up randomly by a British TV company, and they completely redubbed it. And it was like a 26-episode thing, and it was on every Saturday morning. And it had this huge cult following of kids and older sci-fi fans. And it looks like, if you can imagine, you know, Gerry Anderson's stuff, like Thunderbirds and stuff?
Uh-huh, yeah.
It kind of looks like that, but with really good Japanese design effect to it. So all the puppets look like anime characters. It's got a mecha element to it, which is a guy in a suit, you know. But all the models and stuff are really great. I've got the DVDs. It was re-released on DVD like a couple of years ago here. And I stick them in and watch them occasionally. And there's like the model work on it is fantastic. It's a beautiful looking thing even now. And at the time, I was completely obsessed. I didn't even know it was Japanese, you know. I mean, this is when I was like, I don't know, I must have been like 8 or 9 years old, you know. And that was a big thing. But apart from that, really, until Akira, there was no anime over here at all. And that's kind of, yeah, so Akira kind of got me into anime for a few years. For really like maybe 2 or 3 years. And I actually got quite bored with it fairly quickly.
Really?
A lot of the stuff that manga was putting out immediately after that, trying to capitalize on the success, was pretty marginal.
Oh, it was. And the problem is you had most people I know that my age, men, slightly geeky, have a copy of Akira in their house. Like, it was a huge deal over here. And, you know, I go around people's houses and who I meet now, and they know I'm, you know, do this anime stuff. And, like, oh, do you want to see my VHS of Akira? You know, people treasure it. It was a huge, huge deal when it came out on VHS here. And it came out subbed and dubbed. But most people bought the subbed version. Right? It was kind of seen as this really serious art house but very exciting product. And a lot of people then went out and started buying other manga releases and were just like really disappointed. Because after you've seen Akira, you know, watching, you know, like Bubblegum Crash or something like that, it's kind of a letdown. You know,
it's
what I mean?
All downhill from there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that definitely killed my enthusiasm. I had other things going on as well at the time. I was a major music geek at that time, and I was like DJing and stuff, so my money was going on vinyl records. I mean, I heard Justin, you talking about your DVD situation on the podcast last week, and I'm sat in a room now which is full of vinyl records which I refuse to get rid of, that I haven't listened to for 20 years. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of, you know, I had other things to spend money on, and the manga releases were quite pricey. You couldn't always get them rental. Some of the stuff has been, a few years later, started getting shown on like late night TV here, and getting shown on like cable channels like Sci-Fi, but apart from that, it got quite easy to just fall out of interest with it, really. And I just kind of gave up on it for a while. And then 97, I met my girlfriend, who's half Japanese, and she very sheepishly came over to me. Like, she found out we were talking, she found out I had an NTSC capable VCR, right, which were kind of rare at the time, because I used to import, I was actually, at the time I was importing Hong Kong action movies, you know, John Woo stuff and things like that. And she came over, she goes, I've got this tape I was given when I was a kid when I was in Japan. It's a film. I've not watched it since then because we didn't have a player to watch it on. Would you like to watch it? I don't know if it's any good. She was quite sheepish about it. I said, okay, all right, put it in. My neighbour, Totoro.
you don't know if it's any good, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, she hadn't seen it for like 10 years. I'd never heard of it. It didn't have any subs or dub at all. It was a recording of Totoro off Japanese TV, I think. Really bad quality. And we sat there for like, you know, 90 minutes and watched it. And I was just like, what the hell is this? You know, because that was then the best piece of anime I'd seen since Akira, probably. Well, no, in the middle there, somewhere in the middle there was Ghost in the Shell and a couple of Oshii films I'd caught and a few of the Tomo things. But you know, I hadn't really been into it. And that's kind of what got me straight back into it. And then, of course, you know, we had internet access at this point and bang, everything got a bit easier. So I just went, like, Ghibli mad from that point onwards.
I have to ask, you know, in this era, the post-Akira era, the manga powerhouse was more or less marketing this stuff to, I like to call it the skinhead crowd, where it seemed like everything was aimed at, like, testosterone-riddled and stupid teenagers.
Yeah, no, that's...
And everything was being marketed as, like, just short of a constant blood orgy.
I think so, but you have to understand a little bit about British people and British psyche, and especially maybe the British geek psyche, is that we do love irony over here, and we do love to watch things like that just for their kind of stupid value sometimes. But that's not something you can build along, necessarily build like a successful market on, which I think was their issue. I mean, they were like, and yeah, they were aiming it at teenagers, and they were aiming it at stoners, and they were going, look at this crazy demon sex stuff, do you know what I mean? And they were doing this 15-ing thing, which I think is what it was referred to internally at manga, which is our film certification is slightly different, I think, to the US. So you have PG, which you have PG in the States, right?
Yeah,
right.
And then up from that, well, now you have 12, you have 15, and you have 18, which is the age that you're allowed to see or buy these things. And they were getting shows in, and they were redubbing them with extra swearing in so that it pushed it up to a 15 certificate.
Oh, we got some of those dubs. They were hilarious.
Yeah, they are hilarious, you know, and just, you know, just F-bombs where you don't expect them to be and stuff. And they were putting this stuff out on the shelf so that when you went into HMV or whatever, which is where you bought videos here in the early 90s, you went into HMV and you saw it, and it's got a 15 and a picture of a demon on the front of it. It must be insane, you know, and you'd spend like 15 quid on buying it, which was a lot of money, but being at home with it in and going, yeah, it's not as good as Akira, is it? You know, which was kind of, it was certainly my experience, and I think that was talking to people now who are similar ages to me, I think that was a lot of people's experiences.
You know, not to go off on a tangent, but the BBFC makes no sense to me at all. I mentioned last week's show, the ADV dub of Street Fighter 2V.
Right, okay, yeah.
I just noticed they cut out a 5-minute scene because it had nunchucks.
Yeah, no, the BBFC doesn't make any sense. It's a lot better now than it was. You have to remember at the time it was under a conservative government, and it was being pressured a lot, I think, by government. Also, the BBFC is strange as well in that it has a head of the BBFC, a director, and that changes every, I don't know, like 8 or 10 years. Depending, they're not elected or anything. They just get the job, they stay in it for a certain amount of time, and then they leave. And that individual controls quite a lot. And at the time, anime was getting a little bit of flack from people, from the press rather, which arguably was partly manga's fault because they were playing up to it quite a lot. And martial arts movies were getting a little bit of flack. And we had this whole video nasties thing in the mid 80s. You know, with sort of like slasher movies and Driller Killer and things like that coming over. And we had a couple of some nasty incidents as well, where violent incidents with children and stuff, some child murders and things like that, that were kind of, the press jumped on. Oh, we had a massacre. We don't have gun massacres like you guys have, right? Yeah, you know, we have them once every 10 years. And there was a really, really nasty one in Hungerford, this little sleepy little village in Oxfordshire, where this guy went mad and killed like a load of people. And it turned out that he played video games and he played role-playing games, like, you know, tabletop role-playing games. And I think he may have watched anime, I don't know, I might be making that up, but he was into fantasy and science fiction. And there was a big media sort of lash out after that. And the BBFC kind of, because of the way it's positioned, it's hard to explain, because it is, like you say, Justin, it is strange. Kind of has to react to the media to a certain extent. It's less true now. It's not as bad now, arguably, than it was in sort of the 80s and 90s.
Well, so that's, I mean, and I've always heard this, and I don't know if it was true at the time or whatever, but I've always heard that the British tabloid media was way worse, somehow worse than American tabloid media in terms of sensationalizing things.
We may have caught up since then.
Yeah, I think we may have
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. The biggest culprit we have over here is something called the Daily Mail, and I don't know what the American equivalent of the Daily Mail would be, but they are a very middle class, very conservative, with a big and small C, right-wing paper that regularly runs stories about immigrants ruining your house prices and things like that. You know, they're insane, batshit crazy right-wing newspaper. But they love a story like that. They'll jump on a story like that as soon as they can, you know. I mean, I don't read the thing. I can't occasionally look at the website because people send me links, because look at how crazy this is, kind of links, you know. And once a week, they're running stories about Twitter or video games, Grand Theft Auto, whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think they've been on anime for a long time, but they were for a while in the 90s. Tabloids, the other tabloids are more sort of oriented towards celebrities and celebrity gossip, but the Daily Mail and another paper called The Express, yeah, they're crazy, man. And a lot of people read them as well. A lot of people read them online now. They love a good moral panic, you know.
Right. Now, you mentioned Twitter, and I wanted to talk a little bit about this before we get to your Twitter questions, which you got many of. Twitter's kind of changed things. I wouldn't know who you are if it weren't for Twitter. That's how I found out about you. And that's becoming increasingly true. And it seems like the entire anime blogosphere hangs out on Twitter all day. And it's changed things for me. I think the last couple of writers I hired came as a result of Twitter. I get guests for this show, obviously, as a result of Twitter. It's really changed things. Have you found that to be the case?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of started using Twitter probably... I've not been blogging for long. I've been blogging for about 2 years now, and it was probably, I don't know, about 8 months into blogging that I started using Twitter. And yeah, it's great for networking and meeting people. I mean, like, an example is, like, you know, you've got Brian Rue writing for you now, and that was just, knowing Brian is just great. I mean, I read his book when it first came out. A friend of mine who's an academic gave it to me. So there's a book on YouTube. Really? Wow. You know, sat down and read it. Wow, it's fantastic. This is great. Wonder who this guy is, and then never thought of it before. And then he started following me on Twitter, you know, like a year ago or something. I was like, oh, wow, it's the guy that wrote that. You know, and I talk to Brian every day now.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. You know, that's having that sort of connection to people whose work you admire and whose sites you read. You know, people like Ed Sizemore, and there's some really, really amazingly fantastic people on there. Has it changed things? I guess it must have done. It must have shaken things up quite a lot. Again, most of the people I know on Twitter are from the US. I don't see as many, or they're not following me anyway, UK people on there. It's growing. There's more people coming through. Yeah, it's a great tool. I get into a lot of shit.
Yeah, I was about to say, conversely, the flip side of this is that you seem to be involved in some sort of fight every other day. Which is amusing to me. It's fun to read.
It's amusing to most people. I get the impression that's why most people follow me, to be honest. I don't know. And you get a reputation on that. I've got a reputation on there for sure. And I can say the most innocent thing. In my opinion, they're innocent. Anyway.
Right.
And you know, I can't say the Moe word, man. And that just, even innocently.
Right.
And like last night, we were talking about Gunslinger Girls actually as a result of Aaron's review of it, and I'm actually quite a big fan of Gunslinger Girls. It's one of my favourite shows for reasons I probably won't go into now, because it takes quite a lot of explaining, but I don't view it the same way most people do, and that surprises people, knowing my views on Moe and Loli, etc. But I just mentioned it in passing in a positive way, and then 2 hours of hate later, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's you get a reputation for it. People are almost, I'm getting the impression people are almost hanging out there waiting for me to say something controversial so they can have a pop, you know?
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. I think the people sort of tend to want to put you in a box in terms of what you think about things. And so,
yeah,
like,
definitely.
You know, I'll take a little crap because I liked, you know, I'm not obviously not a fan of the Moe stuff, but I liked Toradora, which I guess is a Moe show. And people are like, well, you know, like everything. If your opinions don't fit neatly into a little box, then they start coming at you for being, I don't know, hypocritical or whatever it is they think. your being. And you know, it's you just have to understand everybody's opinions have nuance to them. It's not all black and white. And that's one thing I think that Twitter has helped with is sort of hash that out. Like, you can be, ironically, with 140 characters, you can explain yourself much better, like, and much faster, and get it out to way more people right away. And that's a really good tool. I'm really happy the way it's expanded things. I think the biggest thing it's done is just make everyone accessible to each other. You know?
Yeah, totally. I don't hang around on forums. I've never really done that. I used to hang around on some music forums a few years ago, but I like Twitter because, like you say, it's instantaneous. Yeah, and if you know when someone's online, because you can see that they're posting, and you can just bang things sort of back and forwards to each other, and I really enjoy that. And it, you know, it works on mobile devices, which is the main reason I'm on there so much. To be honest, I'm not sat at a computer when I'm on there. I'm on my iPhone,
right?
You know, and I'm you know, sat annoying my girlfriend by twittering when she's trying to watch TV or something, or I'm you know, cooking and stuff. You know, that's why I'm always on. People go, you don't do anything but hang around on Twitter. No, I do everything and hang around on Twitter at the same time. Do you know what I mean? Because you can do that. You know, I can tweet one-handed now, you know.
Yeah,
well, I came out the wrong way, but yeah.
I realized I may have a problem when I walk out of a movie and the first thing I do is pull my phone out and make sure Twitter knows what I thought of the film I just
precisely,
saw.
Yeah. Precisely.
Hey, you know what? When you go to movies alone, who else are you going to discuss it with?
Yeah. Okay, so let's go ahead and get to your questions. Okay, some of these we've pretty much already talked about. You've covered, so I'm gonna skip over these. But okay, from Vicious Smith, what's popular with UK anime fans, and what anime or manga are you a cheerleader for at the moment?
What's popular with British fans, I think, is basically the same as what's popular with US fans, from what I can make out. It's the usual stuff. Moe stuff is still pretty popular. With the younger fans, it's Bleach and Naruto stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What am I a cheerleader for? Redline. Redline at the moment. I'm watching Legend of Galactic Heroes at the moment, actually. I finally got around to doing that. I'd always put it off just because the length and people going, you know, there's 800 named characters. I'm like, oh, God, I can't watch that.
Join the club.
Justin, seriously, it's fantastic, man. I am so shocked. It's nothing like I imagined it would be. It's so easy to follow. It's paced really well. There's something happening in every episode. I downloaded it and I put it on. And I thought, I'll watch the first episode. And, like, it was literally, like, sort of 5 or 6 episodes later I stopped watching. Because it is like that. Especially if you like science fiction. And it's not even the sort of science fiction I traditionally like. It's space opera. But it's quite intelligent space opera. And I guess the nearest thing you could sort of compare it to would be the Dune novels before Frank Herbert sort of lost the plot. And that is quite political and it's quite intelligent. But it's very, very well paced. I mean, they managed to do stuff with the politics that George Lucas completely fucked up with the prequel trilogy, you know. debating scenes in like Parliament, they'll do it in 3 minutes and you know exactly what's happened and it's punchy, and at the end of it you've gone, oh my God, I can't believe I came to that decision. You know, and it's great. I mean, it's timeless kind of plots about invasions and exit strategies and stuff. You know, you're watching it going, oh, so this guy's done Rumsfeld and stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's
right,
kind of, you know, it's really relevant and really exciting stuff, and I'm really quite surprised by that, to be honest. And I have been putting off for years. Manga wise, what am I reading at the moment? I'm just finished reading Pluto, which I love. Urasawa stuff's just fantastic. We have the same issues with anime over here, though, you know, that we have to wait for stuff to come over. It's exactly the same for manga. Eden, It's an Endless World, is the Hideaki Ido thing. It's fantastic. There's a lot of stuff bubbling away at the moment that I'm interested in.
Cool. Okay. From Alex Leavitt, since you're a science fiction author, do you consider that genre to be your anime quote-unquote expertise? And what other genres do you excel in critiquing?
Yeah, Alex is right. I think I'm unashamedly a sci-fi fan when it comes to anime. My heart kind of falls a little bit every time I see the new season lineups come up and there's no sci-fi. I know that it's just out of fashion now and I'm probably not going to see a lot of new stuff, but yeah, that is kind of what I focus on. And I guess my sci-fi background kind of gives me an edge on that. But other stuff that I'm good at creating, I don't know. I don't know really. I like arty stuff. I mean, that's kind of a given with me, really. You know, I'm a big Satoshi Kon fan, a big Oshii fan. I like stuff, like Kon stuff that plays with reality and I like stuff that's thematic, you know, and has got a bit of depth to it. You know, anyone that's managed to get through one of my reviews on my site will tell you that I go on about that stuff perhaps a bit too much. I come from like a sort of pop culture and analysis background academically, but more in terms of music and the industry as well. So I kind of, the thing that's interesting me at the moment, I don't really write about it much, but I give a lot of thought to it, is the industry side of things and the creative process. So that sort of stuff really interests me, I guess.
All right. From your heterosexual life partner, Ed Sizemore.
Yay! oh, God.
He sent in like 4 or 5, so let's.
Oh, as he know.
Okay. He said the UK had a vibrant anime fanzine culture beginning in the 1980s. What's the status of that culture today? Are they still around? Have they all gone digital?
Yeah, they've all gone digital. There's none of that left at all, really. I mean, the fanzines, I hate to correct you, Ed, actually, but it wasn't the 80s. It was 1990, the fanzine scene started kicking off with, like, Helen McCarthy. And a bunch of her friends. I'm writing an article for someone about the history of that scene. So I've been talking to Helen quite a bit and to Jonathan Clements and a few other people. And yeah, that scene sort of kicked off sort of around about 1990, and then developed into sort of like a legit like proper magazine format for a while. But that kind of died out pretty quickly. And yeah, everything's online now, really. Just like, as I guess it is in the States. There's this one magazine left called Neo,
yeah.
Which I don't know an awful lot about. I read it occasionally. It's not even that much of an anime focus. It covers anime. It seems to be more interested in J-pop and sort of Korean movies and all sorts of stuff, and video games and stuff.
Yeah,
it's more like an Asian culture magazine rather than an anime magazine, you know?
Yeah, I know a bunch of people who have written for me were contacted by Neo, and they did a bunch of writing for them, and then never got paid, so...
Yeah, well, yeah, I can imagine that.
Okay, continuing on from Ed, how do light novels do in the UK, and how much Japanese sci-fi is currently available? I know that...
Oh, he's trying to catch me out now, because I don't know anything about Japanese science fiction literature. Okay. He knows I don't know anything about that, because like, we've discussed this before.
Okay, well, what about light novels?
I know, well, I mean, yeah, the light novels thing is pretty much non-existent over here as far as I know. I don't know of anyone publishing that stuff. There's a couple of things coming out at the moment that Viz are putting out in the States as well. I've just been sent a box of review copies. That's Japanese sci-fi. I haven't got around to looking at it yet. Looks quite interesting. The only other Japanese literature I read, like written fiction, is stuff that Ed from Vertical sends me. And so far, most of that's been pretty good. There's reviews on my site because I can't remember names or authors. But it's at the moment I'm trying to read as little science fiction as possible because I'm writing science fiction and I find it really dangerous to read sci-fi when I'm trying to write it because it starts contaminating my ideas and I start stealing stuff subconsciously or reading stuff and going, oh my God, this is so fucking great and I'm rubbish, you know? So I kind of like try, I'm trying to give it a bit of a berth at the moment and I'm not really... really reading much sci-fi. But yeah, there's a few bits of Japanese stuff over here.
Right. Ed's final comment is, how dare you think your love for Helen McCarthy is as pure as mine?
Well, Ed, poor deluded Ed. I will discuss this with her, Ed, when I see you on Saturday.
All right. From Hisui RT, what one lesson do you think US fandom can learn from the UK and vice versa?
Like I was saying earlier, I don't know there's much to separate them now, really, thanks to the internet. What made me laugh was the Redline review and the raging over people going, why are you reviewing this? I can't see it yet. And I did sort of think, welcome to the British anime fandom experience. You know, it's kind of, you know, perhaps we all have to learn to be a bit patient with this sort of thing.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Because, you know, I mean, I even had someone on Twitter that didn't actually say it to me. They said it to someone that works for one of the big companies over here. Say to them, no, they shouldn't have called that review. They should call it a preview. And he was like, why? I said, well, I can't see it yet, you know.
God.
So I think that maybe, you know, that's the first time I've seen that happen. I've not experienced that, people getting really angry because, not really angry, but sort of raging a little bit because they couldn't see something. Yeah, but because that's what it's like being an anime fan over here a lot of the time. What can we learn from the US? I think it's just a British thing that people maybe need to open up a little bit more. I don't know that many people, British people on Twitter. Hey, if you're British and you're on Twitter and you're listening to this, hit me up on Twitter, because I don't know that many British people. I do know a few, but it seems to be mainly American people. So it'd be nice to have for British anime to come and represent on Twitter a little bit more.
Well, don't feel too bad. It's not like America as a whole is very open-minded.
Well, no. But, yeah.
Yeah, that whole, like, don't review this because there's no way for me to see it just boggles the mind. Because, you know, you'll get a review of, like, you know, whatever, Iron Man, you know, 2 weeks out. Do they rage at that? I mean...
Yeah, I don't get it. I've not experienced that before. I don't get it. I love reading stuff as far advanced as possible.
It happened to Justin with Skycrawlers, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got so much shit calling in to question my analysis when it came, right from the press kit.
I remember that, actually.
Oh, yeah, but they were raging because they couldn't see it. And therefore, your review is invalid because they can't have an opinion of their own yet, which is annoying. It's just,
You know what? They say that the flow of endorphins that one gets from having their own opinion repeated back to them is second only to sex.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably first for a lot of people, I'd imagine. Because they're not having... Yeah, anyway.
Not all of us get sex.
Yeah. You know, yeah, and people were raging me on there as well about not giving enough away in a synopsis. And it was like, well, there's not much more to give away for a start. It's not a very plot-heavy film. And really, guys, I'm going to totally spoil this for you. You know, what you want me to tell you who wins at the end? You know, it was just... just wait and see it, because... Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
I think these in this day and age, telling someone to wait to be satisfied is basically asking them, you know, the world's biggest favor. Fucking irritating. Okay, from Severance, Gerald over at Anime World Order. I've heard that Legend of the Overfiends set the UK anime fandom back many years due to public outcry. Is there truth in that, or is it overstated?
That's a really good question. And we were talking a little bit about it earlier with the BBFC and the Daily Mail and stuff. Yeah, there is some truth to it. But it may be overstated slightly. The media backlash against Overfiend, it was pretty intense for a short period. And I think it did taint how people in the long run viewed anime, who didn't really know much about anime. I still have people make jokes about it now. You know, oh, I like anime. And they go, oh, what's that like? Hentai stuff. And you're like, yeah.
We don't get that at all.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. The thing about Overfiend was it sold huge, man. It was a massive seller because of that controversy. I think it did something crazy, like 10,000 units in the first couple of weeks over here.
Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. And it was in the home video top 10 for a week or two, based purely on that controversy. And Jonathan Clements told me this when I was... talked to him a couple of weeks ago. He said that I think it was Kiseki Films. They really stirred that controversy up, and they were sending press releases out describing everything that had been cut from the release. Okay, so this were the cuts that the BBFC had made them make. They sent out press release to these really right-wing conservative papers going, look at the stuff that's been cut. And they were obviously running that as a story. You know, and that stuff wasn't in the film. It had been cut. Right, you know, but they were actively stirring it up. But I, you know, personally, if you ask me, I think part of the issue was that it sold a lot of units. People took it home, watched it. I was, this is shit. Do you know what I mean? And I kind of didn't buy any anime again. You know,
well, so
it sort of introduced people to anime with a shit title. I mean, it's a little bit like someone was saying to me on Twitter a few weeks ago, you know, oh, well, you know, Halo Legends, man, that's going to open up anime because it shifted so many units. Like, no, that's going to put people off anime for another 10 years because it's terrible.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
People claim Overfiend is like one of the classics, and every time I see it, I just want to put my face in a blender.
I bought it on VHS when it came out, I'll admit to it, and
I remember a Japanese friend of mine coming round and seeing it on the shelf and then looking at me funny, you know. And I was going, "Have you seen it?" And she was like, "I walked out of the cinema after half an hour." Do you know what I mean? You know, sort of thing. Yeah, it's a terrible film, really. I've not seen it. I haven't got the VHS. I gave away all my manga VHSs to a charity shop years ago. I should have kept them, probably. But
you gave away all of them?
Yeah, pretty much. I kept my Akira one. And my Macross Plus, and a few other like choice things, but these are VHSs, man. I upgraded DVD, and I wasn't watching them. And I just went,
but some of that shit's rare.
Yeah, I know now. Don't rub it in. I understand that now. At the time, I was stoned and broke, and I just sold it off.
I still haven't found a UK copy of Blue Sonnet.
Oh, I didn't have that, man. Oh, okay. This is like you're saying. I didn't have much. I didn't have much because I couldn't afford to buy much. You know. Because it was pricey at the time. Like I say, all my money was going on records and stuff. So it's a bit of a regret.
Right, from Chrome on the Hill, why do UK fans feel entitled to streaming anime on Funimations and other websites, and then act offended when they don't get access? We've seen this firsthand on our forums. There's like one guy who's like that's his pet issue.
Yeah, I've seen it a bit as well. I think it's like we were saying, it's the internet has made fandom one big sort of instantaneous homogenized mess to a certain extent, I think. It's really hard to not feel left out when you hear people talking about stuff and you can't see it. I don't know, it's a real problem. There's no one really picking up those streams over here because I don't think people can afford to. Crunchyroll's getting better. Like when I did the spring preview for you guys, I didn't have to mess around with Crunchyroll at all, because there are ways of getting around it, like browser hacks and proxy servers and stuff. And I kind of thought, well, I'm going to have to do that. And I didn't have to do it with any Crunchy stuff. Everything on Crunchy was available to the UK.
Really?
And I think the fact that people would rather watch a legit stream than fan subs has got to be a good thing to a certain extent, like I say, 20 years ago, UK industry was dominating anime licensing. We were dominating dubs and stuff, and that's ended now. And we kind of feel a little bit like second-class citizens. So I can understand why people get upset about it. I'm not a big stream watcher myself, just because I don't like sitting at a computer and doing it. But, I can understand why people get upset. And people are giving money to Funimation, either directly or indirectly over here, because people are importing stuff, or they're buying stuff. I mean, you buy manga licenses that have been picked up by Funimation first, and that Funimation logo's on the packaging, So, I don't know. Funimation just seem to be like, they seem to control everything, and I guess people probably wrongly feel that they kind of owe them something as fans. I don't know. I can understand why people get upset about it. I can understand it's a really tricky issue. The whole licensing thing over here just seems to be, complicated.
One of the big problems with streaming to the UK, and I've looked into it myself, is, I would do it if I could, A, get the rights easily. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. If it's coming from a company like Funimation, chances are I can't. Mm. And second of all, this is all supported by ads. Well, ads in North America are trouble enough. It's hard enough to get any revenue from them. But in the UK, that market is completely undeveloped. So, it's like, where's the money going to come from?
I mean, we don't have Hulu or anything like that over here. Instead, we have very, very successful but not ad-funded streaming services for like the BBC and Channel 4 and the big broadcasters over here. We have something called iPlayer, which is the BBC's on-demand streaming thing, and it's massively popular. It's huge. In fact, if you have a PS3 and you're over here, it got added in a firmware update just for UK users, right? And it's massively popular. But that's about it as far as sort of IPTV and streaming stuff goes, apart from YouTube and the obvious.
How are broadband speeds over there?
I've just literally this month been upgraded to 50 meg. So they're catching up pretty quickly. I don't know what they're like in the States. What are they like over there?
Worse.
Okay. And it depends where you live. If you're in a big city like I am, it's not a problem. There's some rural areas you can't get broadband at all, but that's kind of changing. The government's put a lot of money into it. That's a European thing. You know, governments put money into things over here. It's strange, and my American friends don't understand it. But,
yeah, well, whenever we visit Japan, I always, whenever we, you know, get on their broadband, it's like, oh God, I wish we had this. It's so good.
Yeah. Well, I say it's, I've been upgraded to advertised as up to 50 meg. I probably get an average about sort of 20, 25 on it, but which is still great. You know, I mean, like 10 years ago, I was getting half. I'm like,
excuse me, I'm paying for a turbo service from Time Warner Cable, and it at $60 a month, and it tops out at 10.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crappy. I think I'm paying, you know, I think my rates are different. I think I'm paying like 80 for that. That's all right, time to call the cable company. Okay, finally from the last question we have is for all three of us, I suppose. From Beer Goggles 78. I love the podcast. Never listened to podcasts before this. What other podcasts do you guys listen to or would you recommend? Justin, you listen to any?
I don't listen to any podcasts, just NPR ones and Howard Stern. I listen to on satellite, but that's it.
That's all radio programming that just sort of gets turned into podcasts, right? Tim, you listen to any other podcasts?
Yeah, a couple. I listen to the Anime 3000 podcast because they have me on occasionally. Reverse Thieves do a good thing on there. Those guys are great. You should totally get them on here, man. They're a great couple of guys. So I listen to their stuff on A3K. I listen to Daryl's stuff, obviously. Who doesn't? You guys. But I'm still a big music geek, so most of the time I've got headphones on. I'm listening to music, to be honest.
Right. I'm sort of a podcast junkie. I listen to a lot of them. And the ones I would recommend everybody go out and subscribe to right now are What the Fuck with Mark Maron, Comedy and Everything Else with Jimmy Dore, Chris Hardwick's Nerdist podcast, and my absolute favorite show that everybody should listen to is Doug Benson's I Love Movies, which just got retitled to Doug Loves Movies. It is phenomenal. So, yes, listen to those shows. Okay. Well, that was the last question. Thank you so much for joining us. That was a lot of fun and enlightening. So thanks a lot, man.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on, man. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Tim, for being on the show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and we will see you all next week.